Korea, making his monthly visit with us, joining us through the Fireball Hotline. And Dr. Pourea, first off, this is a time of great uncertainty. We're hearing about college conferences at least postponing football until spring. We're hearing high schools around the country during this period doing much the same thing. I know you have a couple of boys who are perhaps affected by this. What, as a performance psychologist, can you tell athletes, whether they be amateur or professional, during a time like this when they don't even know what their schedule is going to look like come the fall or the spring, for that matter?
Exactly. There's so much uncertainty. Well, you know, Sandy, here's the thing. The brain is the motor. You know, everything follows that. We got brainstem, spinal cord, central nervous system, autonomic nervous system. So the brain is the motor. So I tell people every morning when you wake up, prepare your brain for success. And so we've got to talk very positive to ourselves. We've got to think very positive. Say positive affirmations. Tell your brain what you want your day to look like. You know, Sandy, when we have this much uncertainty, as you mentioned, I have a couple sons that are playing high school and middle school football, and there is not a consistency with practices every day like there would typically be. So what they have to do is they have to prepare their brain and tell themselves what they want to do. For example, they go to the gym, they work out, they come back, they do track workouts, whatever it is. But they tell their brain what they want it to do with very positive affirmations. I love my life. I love my family. I love what it feels like to be a great football player. And that prepares the brain. The brain will believe what you tell it, Sandy, and that's really important to understand. There's a scientific order. When the larynx vibrates, when we talk, the larynx vibrates and it ignites the upper cortical structure of the brain. In other words, the brain really listens. It plugs in when we talk out loud to ourselves. So really preparing ourselves every day by planning our day and have a schedule. No matter if you have a practice or not, for the athletes out there that don't, get a workout schedule going. Get some kind of schedule where you meet someone at the track, where you do a running workout. Have something that's scheduled in your day, because otherwise your brain will drift. And then tell your brain what you want it to do every morning when you wake up.
Doc, I want to ask you about college athletics right now, because we're seeing a lot of, you know, these big time programs canceling their season or saying, hey, you know what, we're going to postpone it. But I want you to really get in depth on that topic, because when I look at college athletics, I look at a guy like Joe Burrow, who last year, if he doesn't have the season that he has, he's not the number one overall pick. He might not even be a first round pick. You know, everybody was talking about Justin Herbert, Tua, you know, and Fromm, and you know, Joe Burrow just came and burst on the scene and did what he did at LSU, became the number one overall pick. But I also look at, even if there is a provision that's added in college right now where they're saying, hey, you know what, guys that were going into their senior year, they could come back. Well, then it becomes a numbers game, because you're not going to stop your freshman class from coming in. And with college athletics, you're only allowed to have a certain amount of people, and only 11 guys play at a time. So I kind of just want you to touch on that, and you know, what these college athletes should be thinking. You know, what do you think the best course of action is for those guys? Because a lot of these kids are going to be affected, and draft status is something that is important when they're going into college and coming out 4 years later.
Right. You're right, Orlando. Everyone is affected. Now, I would say this, though. There's a positive way to frame all this. A lot of players are saying, geez, we don't get to play this year. Or like the high school kids, it's pushed back to the spring. But if you frame it in a positive way, that you have more time to develop, at the college level, these guys get to study the game more, prepare themselves. I have several clients that are really looking forward to this time, quote unquote, off, because they're not going to be regimented with the season. And they're doing, for example, mental health work. They're getting their brains right. They're learning techniques that they typically wouldn't have time for. And some of these programs are really instituting a lot more mental health protocols. And I know I sound biased when I say that, because I'm a psychologist, but I got to tell you, what's happened in the last several months in our society at large, with what we call racism. By the way, at some point I want to touch today, Sandy, in Orlando, about a couple terms, and that's one is ethnocentrism and one is classism, because it relates to the word racism, and we'll talk about that in a little bit later. But a lot of, because of what's happened in our larger society in the last 6 months, sports, football, basketball, baseball, all of these big time sports and all the other trickle down sports are now beginning to realize how important mental health is. So it's really giving programs, and I'm doing some work with several programs, instituting a wellness program that really focuses on mental health. So really, I think, Orlando, we'll be able to look back 5 years from now and say, do you remember in 2020 we had that hiccup, we had that bump in the road with the virus, but it actually was a blessing in disguise because it gave us time to institute some wellness programs, some mental health programs, where in the past we would say, oh, we don't really have time for that. I got to tell you, you know how many NFL coaches have told me that we don't have time for a full wellness program. We don't have time for a full mental health program. We just have to hit it here and there. Well, I'll tell you what, they're finding out now how important mental health and wellness is. You saw how many players have opted out of the season. And I got to tell you, it's a good thing the NFL put a date and a time and a cap on that, because there's about 30% more that were about ready to opt out. And I think they're going to try and find a way to do it coming up here in the next coming weeks.
On that subject, obviously you aren't at liberty to talk about individual players in a specific way, but generally speaking, we'll limit it to NFL players for the purpose of this conversation. Generally speaking, what do you find the mood of NFL players to be as we talk here on the morning of August 12th?
The mood is not a good one. It's not a euphoric one. It's not an excited one about the season. You know, they feel like the NFL has not done a great job at organizing and making the camps safe for them, and in a way that will really help them be the best they can be. I mean, we're talking about a $1 billion industry, not a $1 million industry, but a $1 billion industry that really has not sought out the experts of really that can really help them the most. They've sought out experts that have some credentials in terms of mental health and wellness, but not of understanding the needs of the players. And Orlando, you can speak to this. As players, your needs and wants aren't always met in the NFL. You know, owners, executive vice presidents, general managers in NFL buildings, they do well. Many teams do well at understanding the players from a psychological and emotional level. But I'll tell you what, Sandy, because of this pandemic, it has really illuminated the real needs and wants of players from an emotional and psychological standpoint, just feel safe. You know, the players that are their wives or girlfriends are pregnant or they're thinking about having a child. I mean, think about it. You're going to go to practices and expose yourself to, 60 some odd other players, 30 some odd other staff members, 50 some other members in the building that, secretarial staff, administrative staff. And then you're going to go home to your wife who's 6 months pregnant. There are some risk factors there. And there's some unknowns. Even the highest levels of medical professionals are really grasping at straws oftentimes to understand this virus. So I think that at right now the mood is I would call it melancholy. It's not sad. It's not down. But it's very melancholy because they're not sure who to trust and how to trust. And I don't blame them, because if I was a player in the NFL right now and my wife was 7 months pregnant, I would be very hesitant to step into any NFL facility.
Hey, Doc, when you look at Juwan James opting out a couple weeks ago, what do you think the impact of that is towards the team for the Broncos? Because this is a young team, so I could see it going one of two ways. I could see it kind of like, hey, we never had him at all anyways, so it is what it is. Or I could see you guys saying, man, we're so young. Like, this was supposed to be a guy that we could have counted on this year to help us with, especially with learning a new playbook. So what do you think the direction of the team is going, leaning towards when it comes to Juwan James opting out?
Okay, this is a very good question, Orlando. First and foremost, I want to state this. I love Juwan James. I know him. I love him, okay? I love him as a person. But I don't think the Broncos are going to lose much. Let me tell you why. Whoever they bring in here, and they're going to bring someone in here. Trust me, they're going to bring someone in here. You know, everyone who plays at this level has talent. You know, at the right tackle position, left tackle position, whatever side they're going to flip their tackles. You know, the length, the arm length, the mobility, the athleticism, that's all important. All these kids can play. But from the neck up, okay, the processing, the emotionality, the psychological piece, that's the most important piece at those positions, in my opinion. Because if you got a kid that's, you know, 6'6", 310, 320, he's athletic, can play. You know, I've seen Juwan James play basketball. The kid could play probably Division I basketball. He's that athletic, you know. But from the neck up, you got to have somebody that's mentally prepared every week, that's mentally, you know, got some dog in them, if you will, that's willing to drive block, that's willing to get, you know, down and dirty when you need 3 yards. It's third and three on the 7 yard line and you got to get a first down. You need someone that can drive block, that'll stick their nose in there. And that starts from the neck up. I want people to realize you can have someone 6'6", 320, and they're soft upstairs. They're candy upstairs. They're not willing to stick their nose. I'm not saying that's Juwan James, but I'm saying whoever they bring in here, the most important thing is going to be the neck up. So it doesn't have to be a former first rounder or a former second rounder. It can be a kid that's played in the league several years. Somebody that maybe somebody, you know, has kind of given up on and move on. But if he's right from the neck up, they'll plug him right in and he'll be able to play. So I don't think it's really necessarily going to hurt them. And you know, here's the reality. They've spent a lot of money on Juwan. And so I think they can pick someone up at a bargain basement price as long as they get him ready from the neck up. I don't think they lose a beat.
Not that Juwan James is going to be this person necessarily, but in your opinion, along the offensive line, does someone like even a Dalton Risner, young a player as he is, going into his second year, is he going to have to assume a kind of different leadership philosophy this year, a leadership role that's different from what he might have had last year, whether he was a rookie or a veteran? Does he have to step up? Because it looks to a lot of us as if Dalton Risner is mature beyond his years and also arguably the Broncos' best offensive lineman at this point. Do they need him to be a certain kind of leader along the offensive line in 2020?
Yeah, absolutely. They need him to step up. But you know, Sandy, here's something. It addresses a bigger issue in the NFL. And trust me, I know. I've worked for several NFL teams, I think nine and counting. But I can tell you this. It's not just the players that need to be leaders. It needs to be their coaches that emphasize leadership. So when they're in their meeting rooms, it's not just scheme. It's not just footwork. It's not just technique. It's about the neck up. And you know what? That is leadership, Sandy. So you touch on a great point. But you know what? Leaders need to lead. And what that means is coaches are leaders in the organization, whether it's a position coach, a coordinator, or a head coach. There needs to be more of an emphasis in general in the NFL. And the reason I really feel strongly about this is because I work with corporations. I've worked with some of the top corporations in the world, Fortune 10 companies. I mean, I'm not even talking about Fortune 50. I'm talking about Fortune 10 companies that where leadership is emphasized among the leaders. You know, we teach leadership. We organize communication skills. So the position coaches need to emphasize leadership, Sandy. And that's the key. It can't just be a kid taking it all on his own saying, well, shoot, I'm going to take over. I got a kid that I work individually with that plays offensive line for the New York Giants. And he's making up his decision all on his own to be a leader this year because, you know, they had Nate Solder who opted out, and then they got a bunch of young kids. And this guy's like, hey, Doc, I got to lead. And I'm like, you know, you do. But his offensive line coach needs to lead him and emphasize that to him. So we really need to emphasize that in organizations because I want people, the listeners, to think about this. I know you think of your favorite team as an NFL team, right? T-E-A-M. But you know what? At a core level, it's an organization. And if you don't run it like an organization, like a Google and Apple, like there's a hierarchy, there's leadership training on a regular basis, there's communication training on a regular basis, your organization will not be the best it can. It's no mystery that Robert Kraft has his hands in the Kraft business, and he's taken those protocols and practices and put them into a football organization. And the people, and you know, Sandy, you've heard this. In Orlando, you've heard it too. Some people will say, well, it's just football. No, it's not. If you run your team like an organization, you will have a chance at ultimate success because there'll be an accountability at every level. There will be a hierarchy at every level, and leadership will get trained from the inside out.
Doc, when you look at Philip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon, how important is it for the Broncos to kind of bridge that relationship and help balance out that relationship? And also just everything that we've known out of Pat Shurmur, especially with the Broncos now paying Melvin Gordon the pay bump that he's getting over Philip Lindsay, it points to Melvin Gordon being the starting running back. And with Philip Lindsay, the 2 years that we've seen him here, he's been very much a rah-rah guy, an outspoken person in the locker room, you know, a leadership with it, showing leadership with his words. Can he still lead now the same ways that we've seen him in the last 2 years being a number two running back on this football team?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, he can be, you know, there's what we call the big five in leadership. There's transformational, transactional, autocratic, charismatic. You know, we have to understand there's different styles of leadership. So, you know, Gordon and Lindsay, those are two different guys. They're two different styles, and they have two different leadership styles. And their position coaches have different leadership styles. But everyone fits in an organization, Orlando, and that's the thing I want people to understand is, you know, people group leadership into just one category, verbal, visual, and vocal. It's not. There are some people who are charismatic leaders. They lead through emotion. They get people excited. You know, DeMarcus Ware comes up to mind when I think of a charismatic leader. Ryan Tannehill is a very, very, very transactional. He does things in a systematic way. I was around him for several years down in Miami. So everybody has a different leadership style. So there definitely is room for those two players, not only on the field, but off the field in the locker room, to lead based on their style. But again, Orlando, it goes back to leadership, helping them facilitate leadership because their position coach, their coordinator, sits down with them and talks about leadership and emphasizes how leadership is important because they do that in the top teams. The top, you know, Nick Saban in Alabama spends the springs bringing people in to talk about leadership, to talk about communication skills. And that's one of the reasons they excel year in and year out because, again, they treat their team like an organization.
Often when people ask what determines someone as a good leader, and you write about this in Chapter 10 of Decision Point, the question is, are leaders made or born? And the wise guy answer is yes, but is that the right answer? It's the wise guy answer, but is it the right answer? Is it a combination of both or one much more than the other?
It is a combination of both, Sandy. I mean, there's some people that are born leaders because they have a different, you know, upper cortical structure is a little bit different firing in the neurons than other people. Some people are very verbally apt from a young age. Some people are verbally inept. So it is both ways. And then, you know, the leader, and thank you for mentioning my book, Decision Point, because in the book we talk a lot about leadership and we talk about how some leaders are forged in the fires of life. They've gone through adversity. They've gone through trauma. They've gone through trials. And that's really fortified them to deploy leadership skills. As you know, Sandy, I've been through trauma. My brother was murdered when I was 7 years old, and I had to learn how to really – what that meant in my world. When I became 13 and my brain moved from what we call concrete operational to former operational thinking, I had to start processing, and I had to learn how to lead my own life because I wasn't going to just sit there and sulk in my sorrow. I had to go out into the world and learn how to communicate, learn how to lead, and then I had a football coach – approached me at 13 years old and said, hey, you're going to be our captain on our team, and I need you to speak to our team tomorrow. And I had to respond. So it's both by the fires of life, Sandy, and by born. Some people are born just with the neurological setup. We call it neuroplasticity in the brain, that their brain is just verbally, they're very verbally apt. And you've met people. I've been around kids that are 8 or 9 years old that are articulate already. And then there's people that are 45 years old that are not very articulate. So it's both. It's both by genetics and it's both by the fires of life. But I'll tell you what, leadership and understanding leadership is important. But if you don't understand followership, then you're doing yourself a disservice, because in theory, if you have a leader, you got to have followers. And if you don't understand the psychology of followership, your leadership will fall on deaf ears. Who are your followers? What's their emotionality? What's their ability to receive the message the way you're sending it? And I can tell the listener this. You can look up on the internet right now and you'll find hundreds of conventions and symposiums on leadership. I challenge you to find one on followership. But yet, it's so important that we understand the psychology of followership, because if we don't, our message will fall on deaf ears. And what that means is, coaches in the NFL, if we don't understand who our players are emotionally and psychologically, then we will not reach them in profound ways. And Sandy, you and I have had discussions in Orlando. We've had discussions before off the air. There is a disconnect in general between coaches and players at some levels. Some levels they do really connect, but on other levels, in terms of culture and some other, you know, ethnocentric positions, there's a disconnect. And until we address that in the NFL, in the NBA, and in Major League Baseball, teams will never reach their true potential.
Hey, Doc, real quick before we let you run, Broncos just hired a behavioral health specialist in Nicole Lennon. Is this a sign of things to come all over the NFL, you know, even trickling down to college, even maybe seeing something like that being implemented at the high school level, especially with this whole pandemic going on? Do you think that now this is a sign to come where teams are going to be looking to hire behavioral health specialists or, you know, just mental health professionals to help coach up their teams?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, you know, it's been mandated by the NFL, so it's coming from the top. You know, to develop new wellness programs and understand the players, like I said, the needs of the players. Because there is a disconnect, Orlando, and as a former player, I'm sure you understand it. But it's coming. It definitely is, because in the past, you know, for example, I was a Broncos psychologist in 15, 16 when we won the Super Bowl. But what we're starting to understand now, it's not just a psychologist that we're going to hire. We're hiring mental health specialists that means can develop wellness programs, the whole player, the whole aspect of the player, the cultural aspect. I really got to emphasize that again. We need to understand, and I'll just speak to the NFL right now, we've got to understand the cultural practices and norms of players and reach them. Coaches need to understand that, because, you know, I've heard the word racism a lot in the last 6 months, and some of it is racism. But some of it is ethnocentrism. And what ethnocentrism means is you bring your own set of beliefs and values that you feel are superior. It's not based on race. It's just that you're very ethnocentric to the way you were raised, and you think that's the normal way. But it's not. So some people are more ethnocentric. Then there's classism. Classism means there's institutional individualism. My son goes to Mullen High School. That's an example of classism. There's some kids that can't go to Mullen High School because of tuition base. I don't like that. That provides classism. So what we got to understand, Orlando, is when there's racism, there's racism. When there's classism, there's classism. When there's ethnocentrism, let's call it that, because racism is a very divisive word. And I can tell you 50% of the time it's accurate, but the other 50% of the time we're actually talking about classism. We're actually talking about ethnocentrism. And these behavioral health specialists are going to do a better job at helping NFL teams to understand the gap between players and coaches, executive vice presidents and GMs in these buildings, because there is a gap. And unless we address it, you know, we'll never again going to reach our true potential as an organization or the NFL as a whole, as an industry.
When we continue, a couple more points with Rick Perea before we let him move on to what is undoubtedly another busy day. You've used some terms here already and explained them, but there's one term that I've heard a lot lately, and I really don't know what it means, but I'm sure you do. It is toxic masculinity, and we'll talk about that next.
Training Camp 2020 Locked and Loaded is presented by Sport Court of the Rockies. Here's Orlando and Sandy.
Dr. Rick Perea, our guest, and for the most part over the years, Dr. Perea has been with us in studio. Obviously, that is not possible during these times, but I did want to ask you a term that about a term we discussed the other day that's coming up, and I'm reading about it all the time, and I don't think I'm alone. You've gotten this question before, but what the hell is toxic masculinity? We keep hearing that phrase all over the place.
Right, yeah. So by definition, okay, let me state this. It's a climate and culture. Now, climate means right now, culture is established over time, just so people understand that. A climate and culture devoid of emotional and psychological support and availability. So what that means is that there's a climate and culture that's established by whoever. It could be, you know, the CEO of a company, upper management, middle management. It can be football coaches, basketball coaches, you name it, that is devoid of emotional and psychological availability and support. In other words, there's a lot of dogmatic statements and expectations and protocols placed, that there's not a lot of availability of emotional support. And, you know, this has kind of been the norm sometimes in football at all levels. I mean, you can go all the way down to youth football, high school football, and go listen to some coaches. And some of the coaches do spew a lot of masculinity. There's a lot of machismo out there, if you will. And so what that means, and people locally here will relate to the CSU story about toxic masculinity, it just means that coaches and upper administration, I think in this case too, has been accused of, at least, or the allegations are that there's a climate and culture of there's not emotional and psychological availability, that players are being told that their feelings don't matter, that their psychological support systems don't matter because this is a man's game. This is a tough guy's game. And so it's kind of a very masculine climate and culture that's set, and it becomes toxic. It becomes toxic when people are not able to be themselves culturally, and this gets back to that the word ethnocentrism. And I would encourage listeners to look that word up because it really is powerful, because it just means that you grew up with certain expectations, certain norms, certain protocols, and because you grew up that way, you think that that's the best way or the normal way, and it's not. All of us would do ourselves a world of good to learn other cultures, to learn other belief systems, because this toxic masculinity would not exist in college football, would not exist in the NFL, if we had more divergent trainings of cultural practices and norms in these systems. Because I can tell you this, in the real world, quote unquote, the real world of organizational performance, there's a lot of cultural divergent training. There needs to be more in the NFL, and I think they're understanding that if they do that, there will be less of this kind of toxic masculinity that's being deployed right now.
Doc, this year has been very strange. No OTAs, no mini camps for the Denver Broncos. What's, in your opinion, what type of personalities benefit the Broncos the most? You know, the rah-rah guy, the guys that just lead by example, the more quiet type guys that just go out there and do things right each and every day. And how much do you think the responsibility falls on Vic Fangio to try to kind of police some of these personalities to get the best out of his team?
A lot of responsibility falls on Fangio. Absolutely. He's the CEO of this organization. You know, a lot falls on John Elway, too. I mean, you know, as an executive vice president, he leads this organization, obviously, operationally. But the head coach has to set a climate and culture of expectations. And that starts with his staff. And that's so important that they're able to deploy a leadership style that really they've thought about and they've really – you know, it fits their personnel of who they have. You know, Orlando, you bring up a really good question when you ask about for the players, what type of personality would fit best. I'll tell you what, a leadership style that's charismatic, and what that means is it means they evoke emotions out of people. They're the kind of people that when they speak, when they get up in front of an audience, you sit there and listen and you're like, wow, they're singing my song. He's talking my tune. He is connecting, or she is connecting with me. And those type of leaders, and there's a few of them on this Broncos team. And we've heard, you know, word about Vaughn being understanding the responsibility that he has to have going forward as a leader in this organization. But you know what, Orlando? At the same time, while I say charismatic, there's five different leadership styles that will fit in this organization. So the coaches need to understand those leadership styles and foster a culture and a climate that really maximizes all those five leadership styles instead of just the verbal, the vocal, the visual ones. Because you know what? There's a term of leader that's called reverent. And reverent leadership means you do your job every day. It's the example one you gave. But guess what? It's like a pebble in the pond. When you watch teammates doing things the right way, that's a great way to influence behavior. And that's a form of leadership. It's not verbal. It's not vocal. And it's not visual, but it's still leadership. And that's the important thing, that the coaching staff understands how to foster a climate and culture that values the five top leadership styles instead of just the verbal, vocal, and visual.
Dr. Perry, it's always an education and always a pleasure. We appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Doc.
Thank you, guys. Love you guys. Always love being on with you, man.
Appreciate it. There he goes. Dr. Rick Perea, world champion performance psychologist, author of the new book, Decision Point, available through Amazon, The Moment Leaders Are Born, The Psychology of Leadership in the Face of Trauma and Tragedy. You have a copy of the book, I'm almost done reading through it. It is fascinating. Vaughn Miller says, Doc worked with me late in the 2015 season to teach me mental imagery. The results speak for themselves. I flat out dominated in the postseason. Doc is as cool as they come. That from the Super Bowl 50 MVP, DeMarcus Ware, the great Bronco outside linebacker who partnered with Miller in 2015. Dr. P is not only one of the coolest people I know, he is an amazing performance psychologist. He will teach you science and show you tools, but most of all, how to relax in daily stress-filled environments. The dude has swag all around. And we have hockey to talk about. The first period is complete between Carolina and Boston in Toronto. The Avs play later today, game one of their best of seven against the Arizona Coyotes. Hockey talk coming next.
Miss any of Orlando and Sandy? Make sure you subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.